It's Great Mondays Radio. I'm Josh Levine, your host, founder of Great Mondays. We help executives from hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations build cultures that attract, engage, and retain top talent. If you'd like to be a guest on our program, hang out for about 20 minutes and I'll tell you how. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Great Mondays Radio. There is major shifts happening in the employment market, and I don't think that we have been thinking about it hard enough. At least I can tell you that I haven't been thinking about it hard enough, which is why I have brought on my good friend and very thoughtful expert, Ricky Goldenberg. She is an ICF certified executive leadership and career coach. And in fact, Ricky wrote a case study that is in my book. And it is one of my favorite case studies. It was from when she was at Verde, which then got acquired by McKinsey. And she was an associate. What was your role there? Associate consultant or something?
I think
like
I was
that?
An associate director.
Associate
could
director.
Could mean anything.
It could. That's right. Some sort of technician of some sort. But she has been in and around a lot of large organizations, a background in, I would say, kind of overarching creative program direction, thinking about how this kind of creative work gets done and more. So Ricky is here. She has some thoughts. She has expressed some maybe some concern or worry or observation about how things are changing in the employment market and what it means that we are now in an employer's market and what that is, what kind of behavior that's leading to. So all that, Ricky Goldenberg, welcome to Great Mondays Radio. Thanks for coming on. It is amazing to reconnect with you.
So fun. Here I am.
Yay.
I can see the book behind you. I'm like, I'm in that book.
You're in that book. You are in that book.
And here yes. I am in real life.
We talked about, so you had written about FICA in the book. Maybe we can just start with that since it's still so interesting and relevant.
Also, it's really relevant because I think I should tell you right now, I have a FICA hold in my own calendar.
Oh, that's so good.
It's
that's
in
good.
There
All right.
Right now. I'm not
bring for
BSing
those
you.
Just a couple people that haven't that are listening that haven't read the entire book cover to cover.
How dare they?
Tell them what FICA is, and we'll give some context just to at least connect the dots for people.
I will. So way back when, I worked for an organization called Verde, formerly Ergonomy Design, and they are based in Stockholm in Sweden, before they were acquired by McKinsey. And one of the Swedish cultural traditions is something called FICA, which is, ooh, what does it translate to? Little break? I don't know. Don't quote me on that. No one look that up and then come at me. But basically, kind of in the mid-morning, usually around 11, you would step away from your desk and you'd go into the kitchen and you'd grab a little coffee, maybe a little treat, a little snack. And you would gab for a few minutes for, 10, 15, even 30 minutes. And when you're in Sweden, you kind of do it around 11. You might do it again in the kind of mid-afternoon when you're hitting that caffeine slump. And it's such a beautiful tradition, especially in a place like Verde or other creative organizations. It was this incredible opportunity. You'd step away from your desk. You might still be kind of marinating on a problem or something that you wanted to work on, or you wanted to write, or you wanted to craft, and you kind of needed to step away and let it marinate. And so you do that while drinking copious amounts of caffeine, and you'd start chatting with someone who's maybe working on something else. And it's just this really, you don't also have to talk about work. You can just have a little cup of coffee and chat. Yeah, it's a lovely little hang. And I seriously do. In my calendar, I will get alerts. And it comes up actually in about 15 minutes. I'm going to get an alert that says, hey, it's time for you to have your own little private FICA. And I do.
So I love that. And I'm going to read. It is just two short paragraphs. So I'm going to read from the book, which I have not ever done on the show before.
Oh, my goodness.
Design and innovation consultancy Veriday has been working out of a converted church in a suburb of Stockholm for decades. How are they going to bring years of a unique Swedish-based culture to their new office in downtown Manhattan? Ricky Goldenberg, Associate Director of Project Management, there you go, your Associate Director
That's
at
what it
Veriday,
was.
observes that without the physical artifacts, it's up to the people. And so, with no charming church windows to remind American employees of its Swedish history, a regular behavioral queue fills the gap. At 3 p.m. local time, across their offices, the teams break for fika, the Swedish tradition of the afternoon coffee break. In Sweden, the universal social institution is about taking time to socialize with one's work colleagues. But importing this behavior to New York City, it takes on an additional layer of meaning. One can imagine that even new interns will quickly understand that Veriday's Swedish origin includes valuing time to connect with others. Don't forget the biscuits.
Please don't.
So, please don't. So, what I like about that, what I think is actually, so yes, it's a great opportunity. You've got to like institute a regular, like articulated, like we're going to actually do this thing, that this is something. But I like, what I think is so compelling is it tells a story about the history of the organization. And that's why I think it's so powerful. And that is why it's in the book. Ricky Goldenberg, let's move forward. That was 2018. We're now,
Wow.
I know, 2018, 29, whatever. It was a long time ago. Long
Wow.
time ago. So let's bring it to today. You are observing a shift in employment, a shift in the behavior of organizations, how they hire, and because it is an employer market, is your sort of thesis here. And you believe there are downstream, this is your words, downstream effects that we haven't thought about and that we should be at the very least aware of so that we can predict how to engage and act with these kinds of the situation scenario that might be unfolding before us in kind of our new, very modern world. Talk to me about what you're seeing.
So let's talk about it, which is that basically, and we see waves of this in general, right? Sometimes it's kind of an employees market, and they talk about the fact that employees are jumping around, they're jumping ship whenever they want a new job, and they don't have as much loyalty and legacy, and oh no, and we can't hold on to our employees, we have to pay them more and more and more. You know, there's the beautiful example of Apple going to Google and being like, stop poaching our people, we'll stop poaching your people. And it's kind of working against that when it's an employees market. But for so many reasons, it seems like we've shifted to a little bit more of an employer's market, right? Because of rise of AI, threats of recession, maybe we're currently in one, all kinds of global events occurring around us. A lot of organizations are currently in a position that they are reducing the amount of hires that they need to take on. They are reducing the pay that they're also going to offer those employees that they're going to take on. They're kind of cutting any potential excess support or fat, when really it's human lives that they're sort of cutting. And so, because of that, it's kind of creating some bad habits in the process of looking for new people, of joining new organizations and finding your right next move.
So I'm always interested in this kind of tension that occurs between what you're saying, you're like trimming the fat, but these are humans. I mean, this is how capitalism works, right? For better or worse, is that if you're an organization and you can operate successfully with less cost, then that is going to benefit you. And part of that is the external pressure of possibly of whether that's a re they well, I guess whether it's a need to reduce the cost so that they can continue to make a profit, or that you have a new technological solution that's going to eliminate the need for one out of every two people. That's their isn't that, aren't they being good stewards of their own organization to be able to, if they can, they should. And that's their kind of right, and that's how that organization should run, is as efficiently as they can. Or are you saying there's something else b beside that or behind that?
It's a good question, and I think we're not we I mean we could spend this entire time talking about capitalism, my feelings around it. Let's not. But what I was going to say is that I think the danger in that space that we're playing in is that oftentimes it's short-term gains, long-term losses, right? So you are saying, "Oh, I think I could do this with AI or this recruitment tool, and so we're going to cut the whole recruiting team and we're going to save so much money." But because not everything is necessarily measurable, you're going to run into different issues. Now that you lost those recruiters, here's a couple of things that you should consider, right? You're using an AI tool that's missing out on incredible candidates who didn't know how to adapt a resume and cover letter to be read by an AI tool. Or you're getting too many candidates that now, instead of a recruiter being able to screen it who understands the hiring manager's needs, that hiring manager now is taking away time from profit generating activities in order to review subpar candidates or people who aren't a good fit while missing out on other individuals, right? You're starting to miss out on opportunities in the long term impact. I think a lot of times, most organizations and corporations were chasing those quarterly goals or those really tight KPIs. That happens everywhere, honestly. It's like, it's not as fun. It's not as sexy. We want to do the work that we can put in a press release. And the downside is that it doesn't create sustainability.
Yeah, I mean, there is something to be said. I mean, the kind of ethos of long time ago, I did a lot of work for HP, and it was the HP way. And when you were hired by HP, that was it. Like, that was your career. Like, you were there, and there was a lot of institutional knowledge, a lot of consistency. Now, you can say that there's a lot of inefficiency there, but there was a
Absolutely.
benefit to being able to be stable and understand that. Okay, so we don't have control necessarily over that piece, but you're saying it's now we are, because of external factors, there's a lot of forces conspiring to make it so that employers have more choice than of whom they can hire. So what is happening
And
if
they are
that
doing
is
some
the
crazy
case?
things.
What is happening because of it?
Well, I think a couple. I'm just going to tell you a couple stories.
I
Can I do
love
that?
stories. Yes,
Of things
yes.
that have happened that I've gotten to watch. So they're anecdotal, right? I can't say, oh, this is the way that things are happening, but I can give you a couple anecdotal
This is
stories, yeah?
all anecdote. Yeah, I live by anecdotes. That's great. That's fine.
Amazing. So, for example, I know someone who was interviewing with a top name organization. I'm not going to throw names out here. A top name organization. They went through the regular, 4 to 5 rounds, a pretty reasonable number of rounds for their level of seniority. There's someone who usually has about 100 direct reports below them, right? So a pretty significant choice if you want them to join your organization. They went through the 5 rounds, they did the case study, right? All that good stuff. At the end, the company said, wow, you've passed everything. We don't have a role for you, though.
What?
They never had a role for them. They weren't, they had posted, some people call these ghost roles. They had posted a role that didn't actually exist. And they were interviewing candidates to fill their bench with really high qualified, vetted, had gone through their corporate hiring process and had been deemed worthy of joining that organization. But because they didn't actually have that headcount, now maybe at some point they did and they did a reorg or some kind of hiring freeze, but they didn't stop their interview process. They basically said, amazing, you're absolutely qualified to join our team at this level, but we don't have any positions right now at that level. So your candidacy stays available for the next 6 months. And if one becomes available, it's a fast track to getting a position here.
That was a lot of effort on their part too. Because at first I was like, well, that's unfair. But like they put a lot of time and energy into that
Yeah.
too.
Yes. It on both sides. Like it's kind of one of those things that you're like, you just did so many interviews to then try to keep someone warm for a possible future opening when you don't know.
Here's
Who interview
I'm
now?
not okay. So I am okay with all of this except for the fact that they didn't disclose that was the case.
That is the issue of what we're discussing, right? If they had said at the start, listen, you're a really interesting candidate. We don't know if you're necessarily, if we have a position that's available for you right now, but you look so enticing. Our process is you come through. If you get approved, you get this like stamp of approval. We continue to shop you around for roles for the next 6 months, right? You basically have like a glowing recommendation from us. It's a fast track. Then that's different. Then we're having a really thoughtful, productive, strategic discussion. And that individual could also opt out. They could say, you know what? I'm only looking for an opportunity that's available in the next 3 months. So this isn't the right fit. But instead, what they did was they took them through the whole dog and pony show to then say, thanks. I'm watching you think about this.
It is an interesting so
Because
because
what you
they're
are
like
highlighting, I will say, is like what you are highlighting is that that process is, if done with integrity and clear communication, actually fine, right? If I'm interested in a big name corporate organization and I'm super senior and I'm expensive to hire, it kind of makes sense that it should take me a while and, you know, puts me top of mind on your pile. But you got to tell me that.
And so you're saying that because they have a lot of these folks that they don't have to disclose that because they might lose these folks. Like the reason And we don't know, like you
We don't
said,
know.
could have been a reorg, whatever. But let's say in this kind of hypothetical version of what, our interpretation of this, if they had disclosed that, then that she or he, your friend, may not have actually sat through this whole thing. They may have decided not to. So they held on to the power, right? The information, there's an information gap, and they purposefully did it. Okay. All right. That's shitty. I mean, I have seen, many, I'm sure you have too, right? Like many reports of, I went through 8 rounds and then never heard back. I went through this many
Oh,
rounds and never
yeah.
heard back. So to me, this feels like the similar, like, category. And, or would you, let me ask you, would you say that kind of, again, anecdotal evidence, but I've seen it quite a bit. Of people going, I went through a gazillion interviews and then they just totally ghosted me, or like nothing ever happened. Is that part
I
of, is
think
this
these
a
are
similar
different.
thing?
I mean, they're both impactful in terms of a negative outcome, in terms of being a network, like a organizational issue. I think the example that I'm giving there is the problem there is you're trying to keep people warm and you're also not
I want to
really
leave
interviewing for an
my
opportunity.
options open. I want to keep dating.
Kind of, yeah, it's a little bit like I want to date around. I'm not sure if you're quite right. And also, honestly, for the candidate, I actually think it puts them on the back foot as well, because even if I got that mark of approval, if an opportunity does become available at that organization 6 months from now, are you going to remember me or are you going to remember the latest person you interviewed? You're probably going to have some recency bias and think about the person that you just met, not me, who has this gold star of approval from 6 months ago. Now, the example that you're giving in terms of like the 8 rounds and then I was ghosted, I actually think those are two issues. Okay. One is ghosting in general, right? We have suddenly decided that ghosting is appropriate. If you gave a candidate an offer and they just never got back to you, it'd be kind of weird. Companies are doing the same thing. So listen, if you've done an application and you don't get that cold auto reject and you don't get a reject at all, that's fine. But if I have talked to a hiring manager, if you talk to a recruiter, if you've done a case study, then there should at least be an email. that says, "Hey, thank you so much for your time. You're not a fit at this time. You know, are we nobody gives feedback. We are not able to give feedback and da, 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 da." But there should be some kind of communication that says, "Hey, this is over."
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a function of like it's just a shit show, right? Like
I
the
think that's
whole
a
like
function of because you're cutting fat in little bunny ears.
Yeah.
There's no one actually thinking about what should the hiring and onboarding process look like?
Right. And especially for people that you're not bringing on, who care? Like it's not, I don't
Yes.
think it's an explicit dis I would. And this is the, optimist Josh, right? Like, I don't think it's an explicit decision. It's just not important, right? Like, hey, what about the people that we're not hiring? Shouldn't we give them, like, it's polite, socially normed, right? Like, you could create a good experience for these people.
And I think that's indicative of an employer's market because they're saying, I don't need to. Whereas if you said, hey, we want to have good credibility,
Yeah, I don't
they'd
need to,
say,
yeah.
yeah, actually, you know, we should let them know so they
But
have a
there's
good
so
experience.
many people out there.
So
Who
that
the
maybe they want to come
cares?
back, but they're like, yes, because there's so many people, I don't care. And one complaint, it doesn't really matter. And we're busy and
There's
we
no
lost our
negative
entire recruiting
consequences.
team and we don't
There's
have
no
an
ne
HR crew.
Exactly,
Do you know what I mean?
exactly.
And so
Yeah, yeah.
to me, it's like, there's kind of a lack of decency, and maybe they're not doing it intentionally,
Yeah.
but
I
I
mean,
got questions.
it's also a lack of decency. I would say the first case study. All right, what else? So give me some other examples of downstream effects of poor behaviors. I think this is where you're headed, of an employer market. Poor the
Okay,
employer
so I have
market's
a
bad.
couple, that I think about. One is that sour taste that we're creating, that hangs out. So let's say that individual who I gave the example of, that they do get contacted by that big company and they say, hey, we do finally have a position for you. They're coming in a little salty, right? Because of the lack of communication, because they feel like they kind of got dicked around, they're showing up already with a lower level of engagement and excitement about the organization. They didn't feel desired. They don't, you don't feel chosen, right? You're coming in and you're sort of like, I guess we'll see what happens. I think that's going to have downstream impact in terms of how do you perform at the organization. I think that's going to impact your trust, your
At least in the recruiting team.
absolutely. Yeah, I think that's that really, you know, it sets the tone. It's the same as anyone who's had this example, which is also happening because, you know, we're cutting fat and it's an employer's market, and they're sort of like, you should be lucky to have a job when you join us. There's really also a lack of onboarding, which means that you're losing a lot of that institutional knowledge. You're showing up to, there are people showing up to the first day, and people are like, who are you? What are you doing here? What team are you on? Right? There's no thought around it. So you show up and you kind of feel like just a number.
Wouldn't it be if you have less people? Okay, so let's extrapolate this.
I love it.
Wouldn't every person you hire become more important? I mean, wouldn't the, I guess the ideal would be if you have fewer people. I mean, maybe it is this sort of like, I guess there's two potential situations, right? One where it's like you are cutting out of, force, you're panicking, and one is out of like cutting out of like being proactive and like doing things in a forward-looking manner, right? So
Oh,
the
I wish that
first
was
case,
happening.
right, I think it could, right? So the first case is like, who are you, like what's going on, like you just don't have the resources, no one's thinking about that, right? Of course that's a problem. And so you and I are saying, look, we need someone to be thinking about the employee experience. And these organizations are like, fuck, like we're trying to just make the quarter's numbers, right? Like, so that's one. And the other example is if you're maybe a small company starting up, coming up now, or you are one that is on the front foot and successful and looking to invent themselves, reinvent themselves, and you are going to be like rethinking and rejiggering, reorg, right? It's a reorg, and you're going to bring in, for every person that you're bringing in, it's going to be each person's going to be more important, and you're going to want to invest in those people because they have more like more impact per person, right? Like that's almost kind of the case. So maybe I'm saying, maybe my what I'm kind of coming at is like, hey, if you're cutting, like you still need to have some infrastructure, some human infrastructure around bringing those people on, because they're going to be, you're going to want them up and running more quickly, and they're going to have more impact. So you've got to invest in those people. Like that's in order to maximize those human beings, in order to like make sure that they're the right person in the right role with the right information. You gotta be thinking about, at the very least, the onboarding.
Yes. And I think that that's one of the things that first of all, let's be real. So hard to do right. Onboarding in general is so difficult. And because it doesn't have necessarily strong KPIs tied to it, right? You can't say, "Oh, because we've changed these things in the onboarding experience and you can't measure it." It's sort of one of those easy things to cut. You're like, "We don't need
There's
these
the
types of
indirect,
services."
it's an indirect benefit. Can you make a case for? And you're
It's
like,
really
well,
difficult.
it's hard.
But I think that you can kind of look at some of the metrics around it, which is in terms of how long are people staying? What does your matriculation look like? How much does it cost you to get new people coming in? And again, this is another example that because when you start cutting roles or cutting services and opportunities, you're like, look, we're saving this money on external recruiters, but you're not calculating the hourly rate of your current employees spending time on all of those recruiting, onboarding, interviewing, hiring activities that they're now spending on that rather than profit generating activities,
And
right? It's like,
by the
I'm
time
watching you
those
shake your
things,
head. I'm
yeah,
like,
by the
yeah,
time those
that's
things
an
show
issue.
up, right? Like the time those things show up, it's like it's too late and you don't know why, and it's like, what happened here?
Well, I also, this is just like taking a big step to the side. I think one of the other issues when we're in this employer's market is, first of all, yeah, you're doing like 13 rounds of interviews because you don't know what you want because you haven't slowed down to clarify what you need and worked with people
Of
to sort of be
course.
like, this is actually what we're looking. It's a lot of, I know it when I see it. And you're like, oh my God, this is an insane waste of time for everybody. But the other thing that I think happens in that situation is that because you're in an employer's market, you are often, and you're making singular hires, you're missing out on finding individuals that will challenge the organization. I think what you end up getting a lot of the time is you're going to find people that you're like, they'll slot in perfectly. Because I don't have time for onboarding,
That's
because I
right.
sort of want someone who looks like me, who talks like me, who comes from where I know, you start bringing in people who
The
kind of think
efficient.
the exact same way as you and kind of look exactly the same as you. And because you don't want to sponsor visas anymore because that's expensive and you don't have to because you already have other candidates, you're missing out on diversity of thought, approach, skill set. And that's going to have long-term impact.
It's I feel like we're,
I feel like you're having feelings around this.
for sure. I mean, there is
Remember
this
when I was like, I want to talk about this.
that there's this yeah I mean it, so I again, it's like there are those organizations, and I just feel for the people that are just like constantly underwater, and it's like shit is moving so quickly, and you've got to deliver on these things, and you're just like, and it's like there's no other option. I don't have time. Right? There's that kind of organization. And I think ultimately they're going to suffer, and they are going to lose out to the organizations that are more thoughtfully, smaller, like smaller orgs that are leveraging AI, et cetera, remote employees, whatever it is. Those may, I mean, the ability of those organizations that are creating value in a way that is more productive, or what I don't want, I have a couple of threads that I'm chasing down. Okay, so what I don't want is for organizations to change and do the reorg and try to save money by onboarding by using more AI, and then the person left is then still overwhelmed, right? Like what I hope to see is an organization that is allowing is using AI in a way to make them so that they're less overwhelmed, so that they can be more thoughtful about the human elements of this experience of like you're cutting, maybe the premise here is that you're cutting the wrong things, right? Like
Oh, yeah.
I think that's kind of what we're talking about.
Yeah. I think we're doing a lot of that right now.
What other, so let's push it then further. What other downstream effects, what other poor behaviors are you observing in this market?
Okay, besides the fact that you're going to start looking, your company is going to start looking too similar to itself, right? You're starting to hire people that just look like you. And also, you're going to get less engaged individuals who are coming to your organization because they already feel like they had to battle their way in and they weren't really even desired. Just some small issues. I also think that when you start to remove the human element, you're going to miss out on the possibility of hiring too quickly and hiring people who know how to game the system and don't know how to do the work. That is happening a whole lot, right? There's like subreddits of being overemployed and people taking multiple jobs. There was that huge viral thing that just happened recently about the engineer who was working for like 20 YC startups. They were
Oh,
like,
wow. I
what
didn't
is
see
happening?
that.
I don't think they were really doing any work, but they were working at all of them at the same time. But that is also happening, right? Is that in a world where it's this employer's market and it's really hard to break in, a lot of people are kind of being instructed to adapt their resume in a certain way that's going to get through the AI tools,
Absolutely.
right? And they're using AI in the interview to answer questions in a way that's going to make sense. And people aren't doing the reference checks that they need to be doing. And so now you're getting people that are joining your organization who don't really know how to do what they need to be able to do. And they're hoping that AI is going to help them do it behind the scenes without anyone realizing that they don't know what they're doing. So I think that might be a small issue as well.
Okay, so there's the front edge of that where people are gonna game the system and enter and then be underqualified and unable to do the job. And that'll go on for whatever a reasonable amount of time to cause problems. And then there's the folks that you could do it but are left behind because they are not willing to or don't understand how to game the system. How do we not game the system? Like, how do we create it? So it's like, I mean, I've had multiple conversations, but I'm reflecting on one from maybe 6 months ago about this. You have this recruiting software, and it like there's just so many people that it's like you just get flooded, right? So how do you deal with a flood of that? You gotta have. There's no way that any one human is going to look at 1,000 resumes, right? So it's like you, this is a downward spiral. And I think going back to our earlier point, you're never going to hear back from it. Like the only way that you get any sort of response, and maybe this is hyperbole, but it feels accurate, or at least it feels the story, the kind of the essence of it feels correct, which is like you have to know somebody that's going to actually make an introduction, which is also a shitty way to do it because then you get that similarity bias. And but there, that is the only way that it's going to, because other it's like, so I think there's two, I think you're, I think the quality of the employee is going down from two angles. Right? It's burning on both ends of the candle, to misuse a metaphor.
It's tricky.
What then I know that you don't have answers,
I don't.
but let's consider, since we're focusing on this hiring aspect, like what is the right, let's make sure we ask the right question, right? Like the how might we in an environment of AI tools and organizations that are struggling to keep up and intense and market driven, like when's the next product release, pop 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 pop, how might we start to cr like bring how might an organization identify and bring in the right people that can do the right job and that can do the job well. And it's even more important because we just said it's like there's fewer people theoretically in this future scenario where they're going to be, have more impact, right? So it's like, who's the right person and how do you do it? And how do you do it respectfully, right? Like, that's so you don't waste people's time. And like, what is this new kind of, because you're kind of battling against the tech, aren't you? I don't know.
You are, but I think that one of the things you highlighted earlier is this idea of how do you engage with the tech as a companion, as a partner, versus
Yeah.
as the solution. And so I think that's where we start with, right? Is instead of thinking of AI and these recruiting tools as the solution, we think of it as a partner, right? So to me, this is, I'm immediately like, oh, we should be double diamonding stuff
Yeah,
here,
you're
which
right.
is, we should always be doing a double diamond.
The
Get a double diamond up in here. No, I'm just kidding. But to me, there is something about this. Like, one of the things that I would say that's going to help you is if we can increase specificity and awareness of what we're looking for in that candidate. Right, so many descriptions that we're seeing out there are kind of, you can't really figure out exactly what they're looking for. They aren't really
Yeah.
clear on what they need. This is a, I'm not saying this is the solution.
Yeah. Yeah,
What
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
saying is that,
It's a step in the process. Like, we need that part.
yes, to me, it's like if we can think about AI and these tech tools as being a companion and a partner, to me, it's about recognizing, okay, we need to get clear on what kinds of people do we need. Yeah, we don't even know. Let's figure out what kind of level, what kind of skill set, and that we could use some AI to try to
Yeah,
figure that out. We could try
absolutely.
to think
Yep.
about
Yep.
what are we missing? What are the gaps that are looking for?
Yep.
What types
Yep.
of people have these skills? What level of expertise really? Yeah. Then we can narrow in. So what do we actually need in our team in this time for the next 12 months? Not just this next quarter, for the next 12 months. How do we want to grow? What are the numbers of people? What are the goals of the organization? And then we can go back out. We can use AI and companion as well. And we can say, all right, this is what we're looking for. Who can fit this? And we can write a better job description. We can
Yeah.
be more explicit about our interview process. So it's not 15 rounds, it's 5 rounds. Because if you don't know in 5 rounds, you don't know what you want.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you're using the round. I mean, I think we already hit this, right? You're using the rounds to figure it out. So do the work ahead of time. It is lazy. It's lazy just to put up. So
Yes. And you could do the work ahead of time. You could put up a job description, but I would argue instead you might want to have your team go and talk to people and understand. I mean, in the same way that you do design research, before you
yeah.
say, I need this specific thing, let's go out and
The
find out.
candidate research, role research. Yes. I mean, that's a whole nother project, and if we're underwater, that's a lot. But I mean, it is the right thing, right? Like we are like idealists, right? I feel like you and I
And
are like we're like prototyping
we're
what it might
idealizing
look
because
like.
I'm playing with the idea of the long-term impact. Each
That's
person
right.
that you bring in that isn't the right fit, not only is it expensive and costly to have brought them in and then to have to get rid of them, that's complicated and difficult and opens you up to a whole can of worms and discomfort. But also, you can bring in some poisonous individuals.
Yeah.
And if your organization is small and it's an organism, and let's say it's 100 people and we're going to 150,
Yeah.
yeah, you're like, oh, it's
You
not that
could,
big. That
yeah.
is massive growth.
Yeah.
Those 50 people could change the way that your company looks. And so
Yeah.
if you start
Yeah.
bringing in 10 underqualified, terrible individuals, what's your company going to look like?
TLDR, don't try to shortcut the process at the front, right? Like
No.
don't try to save time. with this employment piece. It's like you're getting these, like, you have to hire, we need this for the next da 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 da. And it's and what I think you and I are walking around, this idea that we're walking around is like this actually, if you're doing this in the right way and you're thinking about someone that is going to be able to provide the kind of value that your team needs today and tomorrow for problems that you don't even know are going to show up, you as the team working with the hiring managers need to do this research, and they need to define it. And if you can provide a sharp description in a way that isn't just a bunch of skills, then I think you're going to at least blunt the people who are going to try to game the system, because you're going to make it very specific, and you're going to know the persona, you're going to know the kind of person that you're looking for, and then you can be very deliberate with what you put out in the world. And that I think you can easily sort. Maybe not easily. That I think is possible to sort, right? As opposed to like some sort of like how many years? Yes, 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 yes.
And I think that it also, the way I think about this is, I'm not trying to avoid efficiency. I think I should make that clear. Like, I want your organization. Both and the hiring, the recruiting, the hiring, the onboarding, the continuing to employ and professional development and growth, I want that to be efficient, right? You don't want to be in tons of meetings that you don't know what the point is and what are we trying to do? The complexity is in a capitalistic society. I think a lot of times we're looking at, and sometimes it's because of the nature of the organization, right? We need to hit some kind of target. We're not profitable yet. That's a different situation. We can talk about it. But ultimately, a lot of times what we're doing is we're trying to get to like tomorrow, and we're looking for quick efficiency, and I'm putting a lot of bunny ears around that, rather than thinking about long-term strategic growth.
So we're going right back to that, the very first thing we stumbled on, which is you're making decisions. Like, be clear about what is driving your decision making and what time frame we're talking about. Is it short term, quarterly? And you can make those decisions. That is part of
Absolutely.
being an organization, as part of being responsible to your stakeholders and your shareholders and all that stuff. But understand that not every decision, every short term decision is going to be a good long term decision. And in fact, many short term decisions are, or many decisions that are driven by short term needs are counter to the benefit of a long term.
I mean, there's incredible statistics around the amount that senior leadership should be spending on long-term strategy and the amount of time that they are spending on long-term strategy. They are not the same. And that makes sense, right? You're dealing with being a senior leader means you're dealing with fires left and right, and you're just trying to push them out, and you're just trying to handle what's right in front of you.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's hard.
All right. Well, I think that is going to be that we're going to wrap up the conversation right there. Ricky Goldenberg, amazing to talk to you. ICF Certified Executive Leadership and Career Coach. You can learn more about Ricky at rickygoldenberg.com. That was super, super interesting. And it's just another great conversation that I have enjoyed having with you. Thank you for coming on Great Mondays Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio. Hey, if you want to be a guest, head over to radio.greatmondays.com. And if you think this episode was interesting and your friends and fans would enjoy it, please share on social media. And if you want to get more people to understand the power of company culture in business today, please rate and review Great Mondays Radio on your podcast feed. It really helps us reach more people. If you want to hear more candid conversations with culture leaders, subscribe to Great Mondays Radio. I'd love to connect with you. Find me on LinkedIn at AKA Josh Levine, on YouTube at Great Mondays. And you can always email me, josh@greatmondays.com. Find out more about our work with hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations at greatmondays.com. I'm Josh Levine. Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio.